No, it actually wasn't. It was tempting to my husband. He and one of my lawyers just begged me, please, Judy, sign the agreement, sign the piece of paper. And I said, husband, you don't know me, do you? So that would kill me. That would be the end of our lives. That would kill me. I would simply drink myself to death if I signed a piece of paper that sentenced millions of children and older people and anybody to lives of horrific suffering. Cannot do it, will not do it. That's not why I live or work. And I would not do it. And it hurt my husband and my relationship for quite a while. We'd only been married about a decade at the time. I had not ever married in my life before 42, and he was 62. So he had a whole life lived in adult children. And all he was looking at was maintaining the economics, the houses we'd earned and lived, my retirement, our salaries, our money, it's all gone. We live in a 700 square foot apartment that is wonderful, actually. We rent it, and it overlooks the beach, and somebody else takes care of it when something breaks down, so we don't care. You don't have anything to clean. I live in flip-flops.
And you've got your peace.
And I've got my peace, and we've got our lives, and now 5 years later, you can look at it and say, thank God that, you know. But it never did occur to me. It's like, no, you know, that's not me. You know, go back and ask the question that is the truth, and I'll sign it. But I will never say I made up XMRV, or I'll spend my life doing honest research as if that's not what I did the first 40 years of my life, because that's what I did my entire life. I've never cherry-picked data. I've put the whole data out there. I won't ever pretend to be God or even that I understood our data. I didn't. I didn't understand the implications.
What does XMRV
stands for? XMRV stands for Xenotropic Murine Leukemia Virus-Related Virus. So what this virus was described by Joe DeRisi and Bob Silverman by a technology that found sequences of this virus in prostate cancer patients. And they didn't find it in people without an inability in their immune system to break down these viruses. And so what they found was in prostate cancer patients, this mouse-related leukemia virus, it causes leukemia in mice. And they found it in prostate cancer patients. And they hypothesized that, in fact, if you have an inability in your immune system to degrade certain viruses, then they're going to contribute to the most aggressive forms of prostate cancer.
So you're talking about a virus that's from a mouse?
Yeah. And so the question is, how did it get in the human population?
Right.
Well, a paper that was published in 2011, an opinion paper by a guy named Bob Burkhout, who worked a lot in HIV/AIDS when I was in HIV/AIDS in the 80s and 90s, he wrote a paper that said the most likely place that these mouse-related viruses were introduced into the human population were vaccines. And because we grow all our vaccines and all our biological drugs, think about all of the mAbs, you know, rituximab, all of the therapies that we've used in the last 20 years are all monoclonal antibodies, and those are all mouse-derived therapeutics. And so what we learned was, in fact, the mouse-derived viruses were coming right along and carried into the therapeutics, and we didn't recognize that pieces and parts and actually fully functional viruses were contaminating our vaccines, including MMR. So Andy Wakefield was exactly right. There is reverse transcriptase activity in MMR vaccines recognized since 1994.
What do you mean by reverse transcriptase?
Reverse transcriptase is an enzyme that only retroviruses have, and so what it does is it reverse transcribes, writes backwards are the genome, which is RNA, into DNA, and then it inserts itself into your DNA.
Wow.
And stays there for your lifetime and for generations after that. So reverse transcriptase is a hallmark of the presence of a retrovirus. So in 1994, our government, the UK government, the WHO, the World Health Organization, everybody accepted and talked about and discussed in institution of medicine meetings the presence of reverse transcriptase in the MMR vaccine and whether or not it posed a threat. Well, fast forward to 2011, our work and the ramifications of our work said, absolutely, it makes a difference. And absolutely, it makes a difference. Absolutely, it's there. And oh my God, it was the big oh my God moment in our book, In Plague, where we presented these data. And they basically said, we can't stop this. They're everywhere. They're in our lab workers. They're in our doctors. They're in our nurses. We introduced, unwittingly and unknowingly, into the human population a new family of retroviruses that has long been associated with cancers, leukemia, lymphoma, neuroimmune disease, including Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and such. And so we're looking at the very explosion of these diseases in our world today. And that was the big OMG of 2009. And when the government realized how big it was, will we tell the truth? Will we say we introduced it by a contaminated blood supply or contaminated vaccines? No, we won't. We'll just make sure Judy Mikovits and Frank Rossetti go away forever and that nobody ever believes a word they said and that this work is all fraud. But the one little problem they had was I wouldn't sign that piece of paper. I wouldn't agree. I wouldn't say it. The data support it. We'll continue talking about the data, and neither would Dr. Rossetti.
So you're talking about the meeting in 2009 that you had with the National Institutes of Health and a couple dozen scientists. And talk about, just let's go into the details of what exactly was happened at the meeting.
That was called, it's in the book Plague, plaguethebook.com. I think it's chapter 7. It's called the invitation-only meeting. So when the government started seeing the data at various meetings of prostate cancers, and we showed the kids, we showed the children's diseases, we showed myalgic encephalomyelitis, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia. We started showing these data. When they saw these data and being published, being presented at Cold Spring Harbor, the great retrovirus meeting every year, they said, let's hold a invitation-only meeting and let's decide what to do about this for the public health. So various investigators who had done research in this for years showed the data.
Who got invited?
Who got invited? Well, of course, Bob Silverman got invited. Ela Singh got invited. The heads of the NIH, the heads of the National Cancer Institute, the heads of the CDC. There were CDC in the room, FDA. This was like a round table of 30-some odd of the government's highest public officials. And so they were looking, and at the time they were serious. They were serious about the possible public health threat. Of course, they didn't know what myalgic encephalomyelitis, chronic fatigue syndrome was, and that was one of the great things that we did in our paper. We were able to fly under the radar and get this published without the bias that these people were crazy, which is what it had been happening for the past 25 years, as other people had described. Elaine DeFreitas and Sidney Grossberg had actually isolated retroviruses associated with these diseases, novel retroviruses, exogenous retrovirus. What I mean when I say exogenous is we all have endogenous retroviral elements because we're infected throughout millennium and our immune system silences that, so they're not expressed.
But is a retrovirus?
A retrovirus is a virus that has an RNA genome that has the enzyme reverse transcriptase in integrase so that they can take that genome, make it a DNA genome, insert it into your cells, and use your cell machinery to make them live forever. So they can't live without your cells dividing and live. And they can't replicate, they can't make more, they can't see, they go away. So it's basically an RNA virus that has reverse transcriptase. simple, and so it's actually very simple. But these viruses have been studied for now 50 or 60 years in animals and in humans. And what the big deal is now is that our environmental stresses like glyphosate and GMO, genetically modified organisms, are actually compromising our genome and allowing recombinants, literally Frankenstein viruses of our retroviruses with other viruses. And this is what in fact happened in our laboratories with XMRV. So what we found at the end of the day, slightly before my life was ended as I knew it as a scientist, we found that these viruses aerosolize. That means they spread like measles. They spread aerosolized through the air, that anybody can catch them, like the common cold. They spread. And in fact, they stay with the host forever, and there are many strains. It's not one strain, and every strain is associated with some kind of disease. They're not causative, meaning you can have a healthy immune system and silence the viruses and never ever get a disease. You can have HIV and not have AIDS. HIV does not cause AIDS. If you have the perfect storm, and you have the perfect everything else going on, and you don't have antiretroviral therapies, and you don't have good food, you will get AIDS, and you have co-infecting viruses. But HIV, HTLV-1 causes adult T-cell leukemia. That was first isolated by Frank Rossetti and Bernie Poise in 1980.
So that's a retrovirus that we know correct. Causes leukemia.
Correct, causes leukemia. That means every case of the adult T-cell leukemia has that virus in it.
Wow.
But that virus was, over the last 40 years since its discovery, associated with any number of neuroimmune diseases that look like multiple sclerosis, where you're in the wheelchair, from autoimmune and immune deficiencies created by those viruses and other environmental stresses. And so it's not causative for the other diseases, but associated with a lot of the diseases.
So the skinny of what happened in 2009 was your scientific research had shown that we are causing a lot of these diseases with these retroviruses that are being cultured in mice.
Yeah, and mammalian cell lines and human cells in the same laboratory. Okay. So we're generating vaccines on the cell lines where these viruses are escaping into the environment, in our labs, all our production facilities. We would have to shut down research as we know it, and the government simply cannot afford it.
So basically they said, we are gonna bury this.
Yeah.
You are not gonna talk about this because it's too expensive.
Yeah.
To let this out of the
We can't afford it. The foreword of our book written by Hillary Johnson was so appropriately titled, A Disease That Can Affect the Economy of Nations. And we can't be misguided. It's all about the money. It's all about our entire cancer research and drug development program of this age. It's every single biologic we make has the potential to be contaminated with new viruses we don't even know about it. We can't possibly test for them because we don't know the recombination events, but they happen in only a week in the lab.
That's amazing. So it's really not about public health, it's about wealth, public wealth.
Public wealth, absolutely.
The wealth of the
public officials.
The public officials'
sure.
wealth.
Right? Sure. So after Ian Lipkin engineered or directed the multi-center study that proved XMRV didn't do anything to anybody, which it in fact did not do. It was as in the Thompson studies.
Well, you cherry-picked the data, right?
Yeah, you cherry-picked the patients, you cherry-picked the study subjects, and you cherry-picked the controls. And Tony Fauci stopped the study early.
When you say that you cherry-picked the controls, What's a control? And talk about how they cherry-pick the controls.
Well, the control can't be a contact control. The controls can't be anybody that is family members, because family members can be carriers of these viruses and not sick because they don't have everything else that's going on. And we don't understand that. That's a real key, because we know everybody that we give these vaccines to doesn't get sick, doesn't get autism spectrum disorders, doesn't get the fibromyalgia, doesn't get the chronic regional pain syndrome, the postural orthostatic tachycardia. We don't get that. Everybody doesn't get it when they get a vaccine. So the question is, who's vulnerable? Well, people with an underlying retroviral infection that their immune system has kept at bay, kept quiet, kept from doing harm, are vulnerable, because that's the job of the immune system when it's vaccinated, is to replicate the very cells harboring that virus. And when they do that, you've got an explosion of new viruses and new cells infected, and you can get a tipping point where the immune system can no longer control it, and you just drop into disease. Wow. So that's the cycle that happens. And that's,
you do exactly the opposite of what vaccines are supposed to do.
You know, so if there's a low level of retrovirus infection and you stimulate it with a vaccine, you're going to replicate and make many millions more virus and infect many more cells, new cells that hadn't before been infected or diseased, with the new retrovirus. And that's the very job of a vaccine. So we weren't saying at the time that the vaccines were contaminated with retrovirus, but in doing their job in stimulating expression of virus from a vulnerable population, you were expanding the number of infected people. And
wow,
that's exactly their job, and that's exactly what happened. And
so
that's exactly what we realized.
The popular question today is, are vaccines safe and effective? They are effective in this, in the sense that they are doing what they're supposed to do, mm-hmm, but unfortunately, that's causing the disease.
And they're not safe for the 10% of the population, the 6-8%, and then those with HIV that we found had evidence of XMRV infection. So what Kent Heckenlively did in the book was he actually went to the UCSF, the San Francisco University, and just asked, how do you vaccinate an AIDS patient? And the idea is you vaccinate them in the presence of the antiretroviral therapy because you don't want to express the viruses. So there are safe ways to vaccinate the infected and prevent the bad expression of these retroviruses. Mm. And in fact, it's something that should have been done, and it's something that we thought would have been done with our research. And nothing has ever changed. Every single negative study, including the Lipkin multi-center analysis, found 6%, right out of the gate of the controls. That's 20 million Americans carrying mouse-related leukemia viruses that are at risk for disease, whether they're exposed to GMOs, whether they're exposed to toxins of various kinds, or vaccines, who can explode into disease. And that's what we're seeing in the families.
But they didn't want you to say that, and even wanted you to sign some kind of a piece of paper that said that you weren't telling the truth, basically,
well,
right?
Well, yeah, exactly. When we did say that, of course, the journal Science, who's part of the political corruption, the NIH, Tony Fauci, Ian Lipkin, Harold Varmus, they all got together and they tried to make certain to threaten us at the level they threatened Bill Thompson and colleagues, who threw away the original data or burned the data, and now what we know is the data burning party. And they tried to basically get us to refute our data, deny our data, throw away or destroy our original data showing the infected families and populations, and we refused. And when we refused, we were fired. I was fired. And when I was fired, Frank Rossetti was threatened by Harold Varmus. When we found the blood supply to be contaminated with these viruses, just like in the days of HIV/AIDS, when Magic Johnson and Arthur Ashe and Ryan White got infected from contaminated blood, you know, they have a big problem, and the blood supply was contaminated at the same levels the human population. So as much as 10% of the blood supply, and we did several blinded study. So they told us if we failed to sign off on the publication that said the blood supply was not contaminated, you could all go home, we made a mistake, you're safe. When I failed to sign that, then they threatened Frank Rossetti's entire 45-year retirement and his wife's as well. They were both government workers. So if I didn't capitulate and sign the piece of paper when I said, I don't care what you do to me, fire me, I don't care. They said, well, we'll just take care of Frank Rossetti. And here we are. We have Harold Varmus on the phone, the head of the National Cancer Institute, and he's ready to call Dr. Rossetti and fire him. Wow. You know, and this, and I wrote an email, which we'll talk about Friday night. I will show that, where I told the head of the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Supply Institute, Simone Glenn, and Michael Bush, who heads the blood supply in America at the, I forgot the name of it, in San Francisco, sorry. But at any rate, I told him, no, we won't perpetrate this crime on another generation. We've already done it for 25 years. We've already denied the viruses associated with these diseases for a generation, and I won't do it again. Mm. And so when I said that, they carried out their threat. They fired me, they jailed me, they held me in jail without ever having a hearing. They engineered the studies. At one time, Ian Lipkin was on the phone with Frank Rossetti and my husband and the people holding me in jail, basically ransoming my freedom for studies in his, for samples in his study.
That's
insane. It's insane.
You know, I've used the term medical mafia many times. That is medical mafia. That's exactly the tactics that would be used.
We live under the medical mafia, and you'll hear Mike Hugo Friday night and Brian Hooker as we discuss the corruption, and what we'll show is the emails from Tony Fauci, from Harold Varmus, and Ian Lipkin talking about how if I step foot on the NCI property in the labs I grew up in to carry out the experiments to show whether or not this virus is actually, or these viruses are actually a problem in these diseases, I will be taken off campus by security.
Wow.
I will be arrested. And I was arrested within a day or two of that in my home for no reason, without a valid search warrant, with all of my civil rights denied, which have been denied to this day. I've never had a single hearing. You know, I'm essentially a public enemy.
You were convicted without a hearing.
Yeah.
Basically.
Exactly. My freedoms have been removed. I was forced into bankruptcy, fraud in a federal bankruptcy court under threat of going back to jail, where my lawyer sat calmly in the chair and I said, oh, that's ridiculous. There is no new evidence. And he looked at me and he said, there was no evidence the first time, was there? So you either file bankruptcy, which they take away your economic ability to survive.
Right.
You know, you can't travel to meetings like this. If it weren't for Terry and Ed Aranga and Health Focus, who have sponsored my travel, I wouldn't be here. Mm. And then you can't talk. So they have a lot of ways of silencing you. And of course, I'm spending my husband's little retirement that he has in Social Security to go off and talk. So what's going to feed our family? What's going to pay the bills? That's all we've got is my 77-year-old husband's retirement. Mm. It's crazy.
It is.
And for most people, they get away with it. But, you know, they didn't succeed because, well, you know, because, you know, I was blessed. And a lot of friends came in, a lot of people like Terry and Ann. A lot of people said, we won't let you fall down, Judy. Please don't sign the paper. Please don't sign. Don't agree.
Like, it sounds like the same scenario that we've seen. I didn't see in person, but I've seen movies about the POWs, like say in Vietnam, that would be captured, and you see them on video, and they're confessing, but you know that they've got a gun to their head,
or they've
been threatened in some manner. Mm-hmm. It almost sounds like the same thing they wanted you to do.
It's no different.
We're gonna destroy you unless you sign this piece of paper that says you did what you didn't do.
Yeah. And there was a literal and figurative gun to my head for the better part of the last four or five years.
Wow.
And so, but, you know, we were able to get through it. And unfortunately, we know our colleagues like Jeff Bradstreet didn't make it. Mm. He was suicided. You know, I don't believe for one second that man, after I saw him when we left last year, within a week, as happy as he could, but that we were solving this, that he was curing kids, his passion to help these kids, including his own children and his wife's children. Don't believe for a second he walked in and shot himself a couple times in the chest and threw himself into the river. No, didn't right. happen. You know, we know about suicide in this country. We know, starting with Vince Foster. We know. It's fact.
It's a fairy tale.
It is.
What they tell us happened.
Mm-hmm. I know what happened. My stepbrother, I grew up in Washington, D.C. My stepbrother was the park policeman who found him.
Really?
And I will never forget that he came home and said, he didn't kill himself, and I'm 20-ish. I'm just out of college, and I'm looking at this, and I grew up in Washington. I know the games they play in Washington.
So your brother said,
told him he didn't kill himself.
He didn't do it.
Nope.
He found the body, though.
He found the body. He was well. And he was named in the papers.
Really?
So when you go back in the papers, he will say, that was my stepbrother, and he found him, and he was so upset. He knew that day, and I knew that day, that suicide was suicide dead. Mm. You know, and I know what they tried to do to me. We escaped on a boat once.
Really?
They surrounded our house, and we escaped on our boat. And we lived on the water. And so when the police came to jail to apologize to me and said, we're going to try to straighten this out, how do we do this better? And I said, when somebody lives on a house, send the harbor patrol. If they live on the water, send the harbor patrol. He said, we lost that in the budget. You know, you're free on the water. They can't
yeah.
take you off the water. We
right.
escaped a week before I was jailed when they surrounded our house
wow.
by escaping in our Boston Whaler in the water. And my husband just loved it. We had a blast.
I bet you did.
So we'll tell that story in the sequel. Kent Heckenlively is gonna help me write the sequel of the book, and we'll tell the rest of the stories.
Wow.
Because there's a lot that wasn't said.
Well, yeah, you are free on the water.
And so you're free on the water. And so my friend had a boat. I called her up. She looks a lot like me. I said, is your boat unlocked? And I said, don't. And she said, yeah. And I said, I'll be there for the weekend. Bring me some food.
Mm.
She said, there's plenty of food on the boat.
Wow.
Bring the vodka. She said, there's plenty of vodka on the boat. And
amazing.
So, and I told my husband, don't look back. And we threw our cell phones in the water. And that, it was, I'll never forget, it was November 9th, 2011.
Wow.
And, you know, and 10 days later, I dropped my guard when a patient supposedly came to the door. And that's how Plague, the book, opens.
Okay,
so
when
the patient came to the door, and I was just getting ready to jump in the shower after a run on the beach. And I heard the patient said, Dr. Judy, it's Jamie. She said I could come by any time. And nobody calls me Dr. Judy. They mispronounce Mikovits. And so this was a flat out could trick me into going down the stairs.
Hmm.
So I walked down the stairs, and everybody jumped out of the bushes, and that's how Plague the Book opens, and said, you're under arrest. For what? For being in my home? I was charged with being a fugitive from justice. Ultimately, I wasn't charged with anything that day. I mean, I had no idea why I was handcuffed and cuffed around the foot and taken to jail for it with no valid search warrants. With, you know, literally, I mean, it was just a scene out of something nobody could
yeah.
possibly believe.
And this happened after you refused to sign the confession?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And I refused the entire time I was in jail. And basically, my husband was told, and Frank Rossetti was told, if she doesn't sign it, she doesn't get out. In America?
Yeah.
And, you know, my husband couldn't take me anything to sign. I'm behind glass. He couldn't even take me a pair of glasses.
Right.
Because I didn't have a prescription until 2 weeks ago. So I couldn't even sit here and see you until 2 weeks ago.
Wow.
Couldn't see anything.
Okay.
He had no idea why I was there. Held there for 5 days without ever seeing a judge, without any of my civil rights, violated. I'm fugitive from justice. How can you be a fugitive from justice when you don't even have a traffic ticket outstanding? And in fact, we can prove it because we were stopped the day I left jail for speeding. And we had none of our license
nothing.
On us. We were freaked out. I just got out of jail after 5 days. My husband's 70-some years old. I'm sitting here. We're just totally freaked out trying to get to Thanksgiving dinner so our family doesn't have any idea what's going on. So they don't know what just happened. And so the policeman stopped us, and we didn't have any of our license. We'd left them on the bail bondsman Xerox machine. Just because that's how I got out of the jail, was I had to post $100,000 bail. And he did the bail on a signature. We didn't have any money. And he said it was so full of shit. I did it on a signature because, you know, I took, $100,000, which he was going to have to eat, because he just thought the whole thing was so full of shit. And that's in the book. So,
wow.
And so, Bill Burns was the bail bondsman. Great. I haven't seen him since, although a couple of years ago I gave him a copy of the book. And he said, I hope you got them. I said, no, never got a single day in court. And he's like, oh, you're kidding. And I said, no, this is how it works in America.
Wow.
It's been dismissed on technicalities over and over again. I filed them pro se, without lawyers, with lawyers, you name it, never going to give up. But the judges are all bought and paid for, because that's how it works in the country.
To be violated like that, did you feel that out of disappointment in the country?
Disappointment in the country? It was like my disappointment. My whole life, what you believe in is God, this country's civil rights, and the method of science. This is all I know. I'm a scientist. All I know is if you use the right controls and you do the right data and the answer is the answer, that's the answer. All I know is, you know, of course we know. Unfortunately, I'm not black because they get shot in the back. You know, so, but, you know, of course we think it's only them. But a 53-year-old woman taken out of her home and her husband pushed in a chair and scared within an inch of his life, running around, you know, for 5 days trying to figure out where they took me and what's going on. There's nothing. There's just nothing. And there never has been a single piece of evidence brought against me. So we see this. And you know, you don't think this in this country. So disappointment, it's like, you know, now 5 years later, I don't believe anything but God. You know, forget anything you say about this country and civil rights. That's a facade, just like our medical industry. Would I ever think anybody would deliberately inject innocent people with toxins and just walk away? Well, that's what they're doing. That's what Ian Lipkin, Tony Fauci, Harold Varmus, Nobel Prize winners, publishing fraudulent studies, deliberately publishing fraudulent studies in order to maintain the status quo, keep the millions of dollars coming in. Disappointment, it's like, you know, what do you believe in? And the last 5 years have been just a total, I mean, it's hard to even think about. It's hard to even think about the country we live in. I don't believe in anything anymore that comes out of a single politician, that comes out of a single anywhere. Hillary Clinton is not, her granddaughter is not being vaccinated according to the CDC schedule. In fact, she probably hasn't been injected with anything. You know, it's time we come clean with the medical conspiracy, the medical mafia, because this is the great, everybody, our doctors are God. You know, I hate to even be called doctor. Don't call me doctor, because that's those criminals. You know, this is call me doctor. You don't talk to me like this. What do you mean? You know, you're no different than anybody else. And
with these terrible things that happened, and you talked about the disappointment, I really appreciate it. I feel your heart coming out, and it's beautiful, because it's just like, for me, talking to people that are connected to their soul, that follow their conviction, it's like, to me, that just brings me hope and meaning in life, and I just sense it, and that through that journey, there was a point where, you know, perhaps there was a time when you once did believe in the country, like maybe all of us, right?
Yeah.
And maybe as a child you sang those songs, right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the Star Spangled Banner, and that patriotism is part of the American culture. But then all these things happen. I think there was a point where your heart would have broken.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember?
Yeah, I mean, I know it sitting in jail. I know it when Ian Lipkin promised me that he knew we found other viruses. Let's just put this one to rest. And we'll help these people. I knew it when they lied to me time and time again. and said, it's okay, we'll come back and we'll find the real viruses. We have no doubt you found them. And we'll help people. And what have they done? Just keep injecting these babies. Just keep inoculating, knowing full well. They cleaned up the blood supply. The FDA approved the tests by a company called Cerus, C-E-R-U-S. They approved the intercept system for cleaning up the blood supply, oh, so quietly on December 1st, 2014. You know, why do you need to clean it up if it's not contaminated? Mm. If I wasn't right 3 years ago, 4 years ago. And you know, this whole Ebola thing where they have the little plane going down and all the men in all the suits. Well, those guys didn't come in contact with blood and body fluid. So what did the CDC do? They redefined the definition of aerosol. How far do you sneeze and have the water droplets go? They redefined it. Oh, that's not measles. Contagious. That's a different kind of contagious. And the American public just buys it. And they just sit there and they take their kids in and they watch their kids get sicker and sicker as they get injected. Or their teenagers with this whole Gardasil thing. This is a crime. And you know, 5 years ago I told my sisters, sure, that's good for your kids. Go ahead, let's save the world. I've seen people die of cervical cancer. I've seen many. That's what I spent my whole life on, looking for cancer cures. It's horrid. Yeah, it's horrific. So, I mean, the what I've seen since we published the book, since I was jailed, since all this happened to me, is probably worse than the jailing. It's the band played on. And that's why we wrote the book. Remember the Alan Alda movie? Go find the book of Randy Stiltz, The Band Played On, because that's what happened in AIDS. You know, you see the marching band and the band plays on, you know, American Pie. You know, they just play on as everybody's dropping like flies, and it's right in front of you, the Holocaust happening, and everybody just denies that they smell the smoke.
You think about it a lot, don't you?
I think about it every single second. If I wake up, you know, in the middle of the night, my husband's trying to teach me how to sleep, but if I wake up in the middle of the night and I think of it, I mean, there isn't anything about it. I walk down the beach. There are more special buses than normal buses. I walk down the beach in Carlsbad, and you can see the injured kids. You can see them all over the place, and their parents are trying to control them and have a day at the beach. It's horrific. I have friends who have 23-year-old non-identical twins who are severely vaccine injured. I walk with that lady. I talk with that lady. The family members, the siblings who don't have normal lives because their brothers are hurt, and everything changes. They lose economically. Their husbands leave. Their families leave. They're just a nightmare, and we're just watching this happen. So yeah, I think about it every day because I see it every day.
You see it, and those buses drive by, and you see those children, but then they're in your mind all the time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But these people need somebody to carry that mm-hmm. with them, and you did that. I think that maybe your greatest fear is not that something bad will happen to you, but that you wouldn't do enough.
Yeah, I don't too much worry about something bad happening to me. Several people ask that. You know, it was funny. I mean, I don't think for one second God didn't protect us. I don't think for one second I escaped. You know, so many people come to my house and say, why are you alive? You know, they kill people for less than you've said publicly. And I said, you know, I don't for one second say it's anything other than, you know, because, you know, unfortunately, I'm not finished. Because God leaves you on this planet till you're finished with your job. And so your job is simply to obey, whether you understand it or not. And I see the crippling diseases. Our church is riddled with them. Everything, everywhere I go, I mean, is riddled with the injury.
And is it true that you, most people fear the punishment, they feel those things, but you don't fear those things as much as I sense that you deeply fear what it would mean for you not to do what you're supposed to do with the information that you were exposed to?
Yeah. I mean, shoot me, I'm dead, I win. You know, because I'm out of here. So I'm not suffering this anymore.
And you want this information out there because you know that, because you withhold that information means more children than unnecessarily.
Yeah.
Yeah, but with you standing up and speaking, and I think that that's, Yeah, you would probably be in that battle where you're having to accept I've done the best I could. Mm-hmm. And because there's always more to be done, and as it continued, people continue to suffer. Like if you could only just end it, you know what I mean? Like if mm-hmm. the information, if just the next book or the next, you know, seminar or something could just end it. And so then you're in that battle of what it's like to just be like, can it be one already? Can I have just done what I was supposed to do? Can we just see it finished? Yeah. Is that?
Well, and can we educate? Because I'm not going to believe, I know how hard I work my whole life. I'm not going to believe there's one doctor out there that doesn't really believe first do no harm. And so they don't understand what's in that needle. They don't understand the vaccines their patients are getting in the grocery store for a discount on their groceries. They don't understand what's being injected by their nurses because they aren't trained. So what I'm doing right now is teaching. I'm teaching the doctors. I asked at a conference a few weeks ago, in a 200 or so doctors in the rooms, okay, how many people in the audience think a vaccine is immune therapy? Because immune therapy was the cover of Time, April 4th of this year. And said, and one person raised their hand. I said, you get a cup of coffee, we got a lot of work to do. And because I don't, and the doctors talked to me, and as I said, look at it, here's what it's supposed to do. A vaccine is supposed to tell your immune system to do something. So by definition, it's an immune therapy. By definition, it's a drug. And if it causes all these toxicities in a cancer patient who is immune suppressed because of their cancer, what does it do to a two-month-old who has no immune system? So once they start seeing the data, and the data are coming out as far as understanding the very basics of the immune system in ways we never did before, and then applying it. So I'd rather teach, and so I'm not ever going to believe that a doctor would stand there and allow an innocent baby to be injected with those toxins.
That's amazing. I'll give it back to Ty, and just my final final question for you is, you know, you've obviously taken this burden on yourself to put you and your husband through your own living hell, and you know, it catapulted him into something that he didn't sign up for, which is obviously probably a burden that you carry. Like, it's like,
yeah,
you know, you made a decision for him, but there was no other option for you. And so, you know, even though, you know, it would have been because you love for him, you would have just wanted to say, well, look, you know, Adam took the apple because he wanted to be with Eve, even though he knew it was wrong. But then, but you didn't do that. You chose their greater good, mm-hmm. and which was still the best thing for everyone. But, you know, then there's all these people that you don't know. Like, there's all these children mm-hmm. that you don't know, but they're suffering, and they're children that will suffer because you don't do the thing that you're called to do, but you don't know them. And so, you know, why don't you just, and sure, you may know some, but it's not you. Why don't you just walk away?
Well, walk away is not an option. And so you're right. It has taken quite a toll on relationships, just like the other families I just mentioned. But my husband and I got through it, you know, by the grace of God and our friends and our family.
You
and
love him,
yeah, I do.
And he loves you.
He's a very funny guy. Yes, he's a very good guy.
Grateful to him for sticking with
you. Oh, absolutely. And so, yeah, well, if it weren't, I'd be destitute and I wouldn't be sitting here, because I literally would be on the street. And so without him saying, he doesn't ever look at it. I'm like, honey. So just yesterday, I'm in San Diego Airport, and I go through security, and the security guard says, you're supposed to be in L.A. And so I'm like, oh. You know, so I called him, and I said, honey, can you get me another flight right away? I'm supposed to be in L.A. And I had a 12 o'clock flight to come here from LAX, and I showed up at San Diego Airport. And I looked at the thing, and I looked at the guy, and just, oh, man, I'm just too tired. Yeah. I'm just too tired, and neither one of us are looking. And he just calmly booked me a flight on Southwest, and we used the app, and we just carried on. And so, you know, and this sweet man drove me from one terminal all the way to the other. He saw me running, and he said, why don't you jump in? Where are you going?
It's one of the things you love about
it. So that's one of the things, yeah. So we've enjoyed. It is funny. when we do get to tell some of these stories and some of the things that happened and how we were protected, I mean, sometimes it's just flat out funny. There are some very good stories, and Kent promises to help me write the next book where we talk about Me Unfiltered, where we tell some of these stories, because it's fabulous. Yes, I do love them, and we have a lot of fun.
I just thought about, like, because your biggest commitment was to this cause, but here's, mm-hmm. he couldn't see the cause, but mm-hmm. but guess what he could see? Mm-hmm. You.
Yeah.
And so then you stood up for what you needed to stand up for, but guess who he stood up for?
Yeah. And the good news is he has children, and his sons have grandsons. And so far, I'm just keeping my fingers crossed, we've been able to keep those children from getting vaccinated and getting injured. And so every month when we get to the fifth of the month, I think of the youngest, who's just over a year old, and I think, God, another month, because the older they get, the less damage that can be done. The more, if these kids can just walk and talk, we win. If we can get them to 3 years old without an inappropriate, without any injections, we win. And we'll stop all of this, and this meeting will be only taking care of the injured, which we can also do because we're plastic and we can fix this. The discoveries we learned in HIV and cancer, we know how to fix this. And it's about time we just directed all those wonderful brains at the NCI, the people I work with the last 30-some years, and just start fixing the problem. But to do that, we have to admit there's a problem. And to do that, we have to admit we caused the problem. And I'm not going to ever say we understood our data. And we didn't. We had no idea the exotic biology of these viruses in 2009. Yeah. We had no idea when we sat there at that July 22nd invitation-only meeting. We had no idea. The oh my God was for real. But when we discovered the bigger problem in the 20 million at risk, what did we do? We took out me. Instead of admit we made a little mistake and stopped the presses. We can't stop the presses. It's all of our medicine. It's yeah. all of 21st century biologicals. It's great industries. We it is economic destruction, you know. But we've caused more cancers than we've, you know. Look at cancer since I joined. You know, I was a kid with the war on cancer with Nixon in the 70s. And look at it. Then it was one in I don't know how many.
Yeah.
You know, it was a closet disease like autism. Right. You never saw these people in the street. Now it's one in two men and one in three women. This is crazy.
Yeah.
This is all about our environment making our people, our family sick,
yeah.
and ourselves. We'll get there.
You mentioned, you said about half of it. You said we've caused more cancers. What were you going to say there?
Then we've cured. We don't cure very many. Yeah. And we know that. And it breaks my heart because we spent our whole lives trying to cure people.
Now, you said you were with, for 30 years with the National Cancer Institute, is that
well,
correct?
Well, 20-something, yeah.
20-something years.
But okay. 33 years as a collaborator with Frank Rossetti, who was at the National Cancer Institute for more than 40 years. So I left and went to industry in 2000 when I married my husband. So I didn't marry until 2000. And then I decided California was a whole lot more fun than Washington, D.C. Okay. So I thought I'd enjoy the beach for a few decades.
So there's definitely then we sometimes hear that there's really no link at all between vaccines and cancer. That couldn't be further from the truth, could
it? That couldn't be further from the truth. There's absolutely a link between vaccines and all kinds of acquired immune deficiencies, including cancer, including Parkinson's, including chronic Lyme disease, including everything we're seeing. It's a crippled immune system that can't respond to its environment. Mm. That's the definition of cancer. It's tumor in one case, it's neurological disease and neurodegenerative.
But it's a crippled immune system.
It's a crippled immune system. Okay. It's all about the immune system.
So think about the immune system, you think of a vaccine like the Gardasil vaccine, right?
Yep.
So let's talk about the Gardasil vaccine. Mm-hmm. What do you know about the Gardasil vaccine? Is that one of the vaccines that works, or is that a vaccine that is absurd?
Well, so the Gardasil or the human papillomavirus vaccines are against a virus of which there are more than 100 strains. A handful, two or three of those strains have been associated with cervical cancer. Associated, not causative.
Okay. So two or three strains of over 100 have been associated with cervical cancer. Okay.
So the vaccines, Gardasil, had those two strains in pieces and parts, along with various adjuvants like aluminum to stimulate the immune system to respond to those pieces and parts and protect against the development of warts, genital warts. And if those genital warts aren't detected early, as we would do with a colonoscopy and a polyp, it's the same thing, it's a genital wart, a polyp is it, and so you take those off and start the process over again. So a pap smear and identification of the genital warts and removal will stop the cancer, the tumorigenic process. But what the vaccines were intended to do was stop cancer. Well, cervical cancer is not a communicable disease. And in fact, those vaccines have never been shown to prevent a single case of cervical cancer. They prevent genital warts, but we can fix that. It's pretty easy. We do it once a year. If you're a woman, you go in and get your pap smear and fix that problem. So at any rate, so what we've done with that is we've decided to mandate and recommend that every population of 9 and 10-year-old or puberty, pubescent adolescents be vaccinated to prevent infection before they start sexual relationships in high school, in college, or wherever. And so the big push is on to vaccinate the entire population and prevent the spread of a few strains of human papillomavirus out of hundreds, and theoretically prevent these cancers. But what we've seen, and it's a good idea. I mean, it's something I worked for. If we could develop a anti-cancer vaccine, that would be great. But to mandate it on an entire population and just not families who were susceptible or who had had losses from cervical cancer and had that run in their families would be the more appropriate thing to do. But that's not the economically enriching thing to do. and so it's not about public health. Cancer is not a public health concern. So public health officials should not be mandating or recommending or spending tremendous amounts of taxpayer money, because they're taxpayer-funded programs to vaccinate everyone, And what we're finding now is we're seeing a huge, I mean, almost 10%, 1 in 10 people who are inoculated with these vaccines, Gardasil and Cervex is the other one, are developing neurological diseases, chronic Lyme disease, reactivated infections, serious narcolepsy, as we found with the swine flu vaccine of a few years ago, serious damage to the point where teenagers can't return to high school when they were award-winning students and in the gifted and talented programs. I know a few in my church there in Carlsbad, and 15-year-old boys. I mean, why are we doing this? Mm. And of course, when they report the injury to the doctor said, "That's absurd. You're crazy. It has nothing to do with that. It has to be something else."
That was my next question. Are you seeing a lot of diagnosis that you're just it's psychosomatic?
Absolutely.
It's not real.
Absolutely.
You're not really injured.
It's in the case of the 15-year-old boy I'm thinking of, he got the first injection and had an extreme reaction. In beds, rashes on his feet, eruptions of things on his body, and couldn't function in severe pain. Got over it, went to the doctor right away. The doctor said, "Yeah, that seems like a vaccine injury." And he reported it to the CDC, and the CDC, "What are you thinking? Mm-hmm. That's not a vaccine injury. Go look at your patient and find out what else he's coming across." Mm-hmm. And so, of course, they blamed it on the patient and said, "He's a Boy Scout." So he contracted Lyme disease when he was hiking,
anything to take the responsibility.
And so, of course, which is the most horrific thing, 5 weeks later, they injected this young man again and sent him to his bed. He hasn't recovered since. And now he's full on narcolepsy and full on everything. If they just not injected him again, we might have recovered him. So it's horrific.
Why are these, I mean, I guess this is a rhetorical question, but why are they not being held accountable? I mean, if you did that to somebody on the street, you'd go to jail.
Yeah. The parents don't know. The doctors are bullied by the CDC. The doctors are bullied by the bottom line, by the health insurance. They're mandated, get the next shot, and then they bully the families into saying, look how sick he is. If you don't give him this, he's going to get sicker.
And he's sick because of the vaccine.
That's right. And the parents don't know. They go to neurologists. They go to, you know, neurologists are not immunologists. This is not neurology. This is immunology. Mm-hmm. This is vaccine injury, and we just haven't explored it for the entire last 2 decades. We've done nothing since we discovered an entire arm of the immune system, that of the adaptive T-cell immune responses. All our vaccines generated, you know, we're not talking about a vaccine anymore. An antibody response is not a protective immune response. So if you say, I wanted to make a t-shirt for coming here that says on the front, I'm not vaccinated. And on the back it says, I'm immune. I had the measles as a child. I had chicken pox. I'm immune. I have a really nice, strong immune system. And that's how you develop an immune system. The vaccines are known not to generate the same response now to infection. And that's something that I'll talk about in Friday in my talk about HPV vaccines and the injuries we're seeing. I'm going to show that the T-cell vaccinology doesn't support that they look like infections to the immune system.
So that leads to my next question. Mm-hmm. Or comment that whoever determines the dictionary or the words wins the argument. And so now they have, whoever they is, they have made it to where vaccination equals immunization in our vernacular, but that's
correct.
Not true, is
it's
it?
It's not true. Absolutely. Vaccination does not equal immunity. It doesn't. It doesn't. It doesn't. So why are you injecting anyone with any of this stuff? And that's the point. So
if it did equal immunity, you wouldn't need a booster, would you?
Lorette, that's right. Why would you need 2 months, 4 months, 6 months? Why would you need my mom? Great, I love mom. She called me up, and you know, I've been going through all this, and in a year or so ago, she called me up, and she didn't tell me that she got injured from a flu and a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine in 2013. So for 6 months, she had horrific pain. She had horrific inflammation. She was sick. She couldn't walk. She couldn't walk her dog, all the things she loves. And she finally got over that with a lot of good nutrition and a lot of good supplements and healthful living. So she went back to the doctor last September, and he said, well, it's time for your booster. And we just realized that you need the more of the pneumococcal vaccine because that one didn't finish the job. And she said, oh yeah, right, you didn't kill me the first time. And then she said, I'm an anti-vaxxer, and you won't come anywhere near me with that needle. We're done. And I'm like, you go, mom. And I said, that's great.
Her.
Yeah, so she didn't want to tell me because, of course, you know, moms don't listen to kids, and kids don't listen to moms. And so, you know.
But isn't that the epitome, though, of where the medical system is today? Just the doublethink? She was injected. She's 6 months out of commission. As soon as she gets back on her feet, let's give you another.
Yeah, or you're going to get sicker.
Right.
And so this is the worst thing against the old people, the most vulnerable population. We see it on TV, the big bad wolf. You're going to make your grandchildren sick if you don't get this. Well, those old people are immune. They're like me. We're old. We're immune. We had these diseases. Mm-hmm. They're not going to make the kids sick unless they get that vaccine, which doesn't confer protection and is just spitting out the very antigens and infectious agents that you're trying to protect the kids from. And yet, the pertussis, the whooping cough, as you know from Andy Wakefield, is among the worst. Mm-hmm. It's not at all protected. It's the vaccinated spreading the whooping cough. Those are vaccinated kids in our colleges. They're 20 years old. That wasn't the unvaccinated. So you're right. The message and who controls the message. And that's what's wrong with everything about our public awareness. There's, I mean, we're inundated. You can't turn on the TV without seeing Opdivo, a chance to live longer, and these people just walk. You know, what do you mean you caused the freaking cancer and the side effects? Just the rest of the whole commercial is about what's going to happen. You can die from that. Of course you can. Because if you get the pneumonitis, the inflammation of the lungs, you could die right away from Opdivo. But you have cancer, you have no choice, so you're their guinea pigs. They created their entire market, and they're treating you. It's horrible. I have to turn off the TV. My husband goes grocery shopping. My husband watches TV because I can't walk in a store and look at that and call it food. Mm-hmm. You know, so
yeah. It's just. And you're right. In the brainwashing that we undergo with commercials is insane. I mean, I talk about that a lot, so my kids are always watching for that. And when we will watch a commercial about a new drug, the kids, even my six-year-old, she's like, look at the side effects, Daddy. It causes the thing it's supposed to prevent. You have a headache, take this, and it might cause a headache, or it might cause a brain tumor.
Right.
Right? I mean, the list of side effects is insane. But we've been brainwashed to think that is medicine.
Right. And we've never before advertised drugs. You know, we haven't, it's
D2C,
not marketing
direct to
consumer.
The
patients. That's right.
We're the only country other than New Zealand that does that.
Yeah.
And no other country allows consumer advertising on drugs.
Yeah, and it should be stopped because the consumer can't possibly know. Just like we should all be going to our doctor and saying, no, you inject that in yourself. You tell me everything that's in that needle. And right. And or you're not touching my baby.
That's
and that's
great.
What, you know, everybody says, well, what do we do, Judy? What do we do? What do we do when we go to the doctor? You know, I say, well, you take your shotgun and you say you come anywhere near my kids and you die. It's simple. It's, you know, this is America has to take back their health. You know, nobody should be allowed to inject you with a toxin any more than they should be able to walk in your house and shoot you with a gun.
I agree. And that is a potential deadly weapon.
Absolutely.
And you should be able to be allowed to protect yourself.
Correct. And when they do the damage because of the no liability rule of the vaccine courts, nobody can do anything to them. Hmm. You know, that doctor was quick to get rid of that 15-year-old. Go find another doctor. Yeah. I can't help you. So the doctors get rid of the patients. Yeah. They won't do anything about it. Hmm. It is the crisis, you know, it is the Holocaust of our time, of the 21st century. And we've lost a generation. Will we lose more? I hope not. I hope we can protect the next generation. But all those 20-year-olds, all those adults that are aging out, and the parents who, you know, your children are supposed to help take care of you, not the other way around. Yeah. And here's whole families where we've lost the name in the fourth generation because the son is injured. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he can't carry on the family name.